Hello there. Today is Tuesday, August 15th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, President Trump denounces white supremacists who staged the deadly rally over the weekend.
To anyone who acted criminally in this weekend's racist violence, you will be held fully accountable. Justice will be delivered.
But protesters have gathered in front of Trump Tower in New York. A top U.S. general answers questions about the threat of North Korea, and one of the hottest musical groups on the planet right now. It's all on today's International Edition. President Donald Trump has denounced the white supremacist behind Saturday's deadly rally in Charlottesville, Virginia. For the first time since the violence, Trump mentioned by name neo-Nazis, the Ku Klux Klan, and white supremacists.
Racism is evil, and those who cause violence in its name are criminals and thugs, including the KKK, neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and other hate groups that are repugnant to everything we hold dear as Americans. We are a nation founded on the truth that all of us are created equal. We are equal in the eyes of our Creator. We are equal under the law, and we are equal under our Constitution. Those who spread violence in the name of bigotry strike at the very core of America.
Well, Attorney General Jeff Sessions also telling ABC News that the Justice Department has opened a civil rights investigation into Saturday's violence.
Well, it does meet the definition of domestic terrorism in our statute. We are pursuing it in the Department of Justice in every way that we can make a case. You can be sure we will charge and advance the investigation toward the most serious charges that can be brought, because this is an unequivocally unacceptable and evil attack that cannot be accepted in America.
Well, Trump's comments had followed intense criticism from across the political spectrum for failing for 2 days to explicitly use the words white supremacists and neo-Nazis in condemning the violence. But it wasn't enough for many New Yorkers who gathered outside Trump Tower on Monday in protest. The president is spending the first night at Trump Tower in New York since taking office. Meanwhile, the far-right groups that held the rally to protest plans by Charlottesville to tear down a statue of General Robert E. Lee, commander of the Confederate forces that fought against federal forces in the U.S. Civil War. Now, that war was essentially about slavery in the U.S. South. And joining me now for some analysis and reaction to all that's been happening is Hillary Shelton, director of the NCAA's Washington Bureau. And he's also Senior Vice President for Policy and Advocacy. First of all, what was your initial reaction to the events that unfolded over the weekend?
Quite frankly, as I watched that car barrel into all of those pro-diversity demonstrators, it's very ugly to see that something that we thought was so much a part of our past, the violence of extremist groups like the Klan and the white Aryan resistance, groups like the Nazi Party and other extremists, white supremacists, were once again raising their ugly heads and calling on the awful and discriminatory things that they've raised their head and called for, again, for much too long.
And you mentioned Nazis. Apparently the young man that was driving that vehicle, according to a former teacher of his, apparently was an admirer of Hitler.
Oh, absolutely. He was considered very strongly a Nazi sympathizer. It was one of the words used to describe him. He was enthralled with the Nazi movement in Germany. Of course, we know the ugly history around that as well, but for some reason he was drawn into it.
According to the Southern Poverty Law Center, hate crimes and hate groups have dramatically risen and have been rising. Why? Why is this happening? I thought we were past all this.
And I'm with you. It just seems to make sense that as a civilized nation in the U.S., our development, our continued diversity within the country, the blending that happens in our country in a way like no other country in the world, that we would think that all of these ugly signs of the segregated United States was all over and done. with the passage of very important pieces of legislation, right, the Civil Rights Act of 64 and the Voting Rights Act of 65, and Fair Housing, as we think about integration in our society, Act of 1968. But to see the growth pattern that began among these extremists, and you're right, the recruitment practices, the growth and the expansion of new hate groups in the United States, white supremacist groups, has continued. Many of them look at the advent of America electing its first African-American president as being one of the tools that have been utilized by these extremists to do just that. I mean, it's an amazing thing as we look at this progress over these years through the Obama administration and then to more recent times, as we've heard even more discussion and seen more data on the growth of these groups and, of course, their recruitment efforts and the like. They've changed their names. You still have the old extremist racist groups like the Klan and the Nazi Party, the anti-Semitic and pretty much xenophobic groups in our country. But you've seen other white supremacist groups also come out of this movement, some of them attaching themselves to the Tea Party movement that we're familiar with that's been in place now for 10 years or longer.
Do you think that these people have been here all along but are just being emboldened by the current administration, in particular this president?
As we've looked at these extremist groups, they pick certain times to do their recruitment, and it's usually directly connected to our economy. We find the kind of things we experience with the economic downturn. That's when the representatives from the Klan stop by with a holiday ham or with a turkey, something to feed them, but also an opportunity to indoctrinate them into their white extremist perspectives and values. In many ways, when we look at what's going on now, the economic downturn happened prior to Obama coming to office and during the first part of him being there as we moved to fix those problems. But even by then, as we watched the economy slip, as we watched things happening in the outer places of the United States, they knew that something was going on, and they began to feed them that same old ideology that we've seen too often, this even enshrined in old stories like the Turner Diaries that point to really a process in which we can get back to a time when America was great for me and my family. So as we move into discussions about the Trump administration, whether intentional or not, when he talks about making America great again, the question then becomes, in those folks' minds that have decided now that this is the direction they want to go, what did they envision in their minds as the time when America was great for them? And what does that mean to the new diversity and the new realities of our country when you have so many people of color living here now that have come from so many places across the world that are now involving themselves in our society, when issues of race, of concerns like immigration, and they point to immigrants in our country, particularly those without documentation, as being the reason why we're having the problems we have now. When people embrace a time and an era in which America was great for them, something they want to get back to, that's when we began to answer the questions of just how we end up where we are. What's on these folks' minds? And then looking for an opportunity to be able to rekindle what they remember as being the best times to be an American.
What did you think of the initial reaction from the president? And do you think that what he has said now is enough?
His initial responses were woefully inadequate. It did not speak to the realities of what was going on in Charlottesville, Virginia. It didn't talk about those extremists, those members of the Klan and the Nazi Party. He didn't mention that David Duke happened to be in the audience as well. He was very well known for being that neo-Nazi extremist that then became Grand Dragon of the Ku Klux Klan and then utilized that to usher him into elected office. He didn't recognize those things going on or even the strategies that had been utilized before this by extremist organizations like the Klan and otherwise to taunt those that support integration and our nation being as diverse as it is and our having strength in that diversity. He didn't recognize those things and start talking about all sides. It's not about all sides. It's really about what is in the United States of America, the vision and the values that we hold that are so clear and close to our Constitution that guarantee equal protection and equal opportunity for all without discrimination. So it was woefully inadequate and woefully misleading on so many levels. It was good to see that regardless of political affiliation, you had those that had come out to say, look, you've missed the point. You've not even gotten close to it. When I heard Democrats and Republicans, as we think about things in this bipartisan world here in D.C. that we see all too unoften, are in often, it's important that we're looking at how this ends up showing itself along those lines. The speech that he gave today spoke much more consistently with the issues that are before us. We have these groups that want to go back to a day of segregation and discrimination in which they have the advantages of white supremacy. And then you have the diversity of Americans of all races and ethnicities, of genders, those who are members of the LGBT community, Muslims, standing together and saying, what you're talking about is not our America. We're looking for an America that's welcoming to all, as it's stated at the foot of the Statue of Liberty. So it was good to hear him understand that, or at least speak in a manner that recognized the realities of that particular struggle.
Did it bother you at all that it was sort of under coercion or pressure from the past couple of days, or does it have the same meaning regardless because he said what he should have said?
It is concerning that he had to go back and try again, that he didn't get it from the very beginning, that he didn't recognize in the heat of the battle and the struggle that was going on in Charlottesville, Virginia, how important it was to be very clear of mind and also very clear in how he recognized the need for America to take on these issues as well. It was good to see him transition to a point where, for one reason or another, he seemed to be able to demonstrate that he recognized what the problems are and what must be done about those issues. I guess you could very well argue better late than never.
Hillary Shelton, director of the NAACP, Washington Bureau, and senior vice president for policy and advocacy. We greatly appreciate your perspective. And turning now to the social media angle on what's been happening, we are joined by VOA's Andrew Palchevsky. Andrew, I know this has been playing out a lot online.
Yeah, there's a lot of discussion about Charlottesville, and there are a lot of instances where people are fighting back against the white supremacist and the white nationalist using social and digital media. And there are two of those stories I want to highlight today.
Okay.
The first is GoDaddy.com. It's the web hosting company that you might remember having salacious commercials during the Super Bowl. That's kind of what they're known for. But they host a lot of different websites. And among one of the websites they're hosting is called The Daily Stormer. It's a white nationalist website, and that website, The Daily Stormer, posted an article about Heather Heyer, the 32-year-old woman who was killed when she was hit by that car during the protests there in Charlottesville. And in this article on the web, they call her horrible things, making light of her death. Well, GoDaddy saw this. They were actually alerted to this via social media, and they said that they are giving the website 24 hours to find a new host, or they are blocking it from their service. They're shutting it down because they say this behavior violates their terms of service. Now, this website has since tried to go to other web hosts, including Google, and they have been rejected from those other web hosts. So it's unclear where this website might end up. It may be just shut down,
wow.
But certainly a lot of people hoping it will be shut down. But there's also a lot of questions about why it was hosted in the first place and why it was allowed to put up this content prior to these alerts coming
right.
through on social media. So a lot of questions about that still.
I guess that's sort of one of those free speech questions. When is it not okay?
And that's the question that a lot of people are tackling. When do you have a right to free speech, even when the views are repugnant and you totally disagree with them? It's part of the First Amendment of the Constitution, a right to free speech. So that is something that a lot of people are debating as well. And I know you talked yesterday with our colleague Steve Norman about Twitter and how
mm-hmm.
they're striking out against these white nationalists
yes.
using photos to try to identify them
right.
In a process called doxing. It's when people go online and find the name and address and phone number, email of these different people. And we're seeing the results of that today. One 20-year-old college student in the state of Nevada was identified and found by media organizations. He says that it's not who he is. It doesn't represent who he is, this man screaming in this photo holding one of these torches. Another man was fired from his job at a restaurant after he was identified on social media. And even a family of a young man said that they've identified this as their son, their brother, and they disavow what he's said, and they've had to contact the media and address that. But there is an interesting danger in releasing this information. There's a potential for these white nationalists to face physical harm. There have been a number of instances, in fact, on Twitter where the addresses and the phone numbers and the emails have been released and people have deleted them. Even the people who are so opposed to this hate speech, they say those people don't deserve to be put in danger. Their families don't deserve to be put in danger. Their friends don't deserve to be put in danger just because of their views.
All right. Well said. Thank you very much, Andrew. You can follow him on Twitter at APAL. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. China is banning coal, iron, and seafood imports from North Korea. President Trump orders a China trade investigation. The first American woman to conquer K2 in Pakistan tells VOA her story. And liftoff for Africa's first airport brewery. Find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Well, the top U.S. general was in South Korea on Monday amid unprecedented threats between Washington and Pyongyang. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb is traveling with General Joe Dunford, the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and reports from Osan Air Base in South Korea.
A war of words with potentially catastrophic consequences. President Donald Trump lashing out after North Korea threatened to strike the U.S. island territory of Guam.
And if anything happens to Guam, there's going to be big, big trouble in North Korea.
U.S. General Joe Dunford told reporters en route to Korea that the U.S. military's primary focus is supporting the administration's diplomatic and economic campaign to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula. But, he said, he's also drawing up attack plans.
As a military leader, I've got to make sure that the president does have viable military options in the event the diplomatic and economic pressurization campaign fails.
Upon his arrival at Osan Air Base, Dunford wasted no time speaking with top commanders to gauge the temperature in the region. North Korea has made big gains in its nuclear weapons development through several missile tests this year. Pyongyang now says it has a nuclear missile capable of reaching the United States. After speaking with military and political leaders Monday in Seoul, Dunford heads to China, a nation seen as crucial to international plans to stop North Korea's nuclear weapons program. Chinese leaders have been reluctant to deny resources to North Korea in order to pressure Pyongyang to curb its nuclear weapons ambitions. But Beijing has shown signs it could be growing weary of its bad-behaving neighbor. China has voted alongside a unanimous UN Security Council to impose strict new sanctions on Pyongyang. And Chinese Communist Party newspaper, The Global Times, warned that China will not come to North Korea's aid if it launches missiles threatening American soil. Carla Babb, VOA News, Osan Air Base, South Korea.
And you're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. For detailed information about your favorite sports, visit our website, voaafrica.com. And if you want to chat with me and sports fans in Africa and all over the world, visit my Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. There, the sports talk never stops. So come on, join the action with the Sunny Side of Sports.
VOA's International Edition continues now. A new documentary film follows an underground group of citizen journalists from ISIS-occupied Raqqa, Syria, risking their lives to expose the atrocities of the militants against civilians on social media. VOA's Penelope Pulu spoke with Oscar-nominated filmmaker Matthew Heineman, as well as Abdulaziz Al-Hamza, the co-founder of the group called Raqqa is Being Slaughtered Silently.
They are citizen journalists facing impossible odds in their fight against Islamic State, also known as ISIS. The film City of Ghosts documents the work of the group Raqqa Has Been Slaughtered Silently. It publishes information online about atrocities committed by ISIS in its self-proclaimed capital of Raqqa, Syria.
Men and women of Raqqa's Being Slaughtered Silently are real journalistic heroes.
honored by the Committee to Protect Journalists, Raqqa has been slaughtered silently, is lifting the veil of isolation for the besieged citizens of Raqqa. It is also rousing the wrath of ISIS. Abdul Aziz Al Hamza is a co-founder of Raqqa is Being Slaughtered Silently. Born in Raqqa, Al Hamza explains what drives him and others to risk their lives.
Defeating ISIS as a group is not going to solve the problem. So we're fighting to fight against ISIS ideology because we've seen ISIS everywhere. It's not surrounded in Iraq and in Syria and Iraq. So we've seen ISIS in Europe, in US, in Asia. So the main important thing to work against this ideology.
Ayo, Ibrahim. Hello. Ibrahim. Hello.
Matthew Heinemann is the director of City of Ghosts, which filmed RBSS members operating undercover in safe houses in Turkey and Germany.
Now, they're the face of this movement. They're the ones that are being threatened. Their colleagues are still inside Raqqa as we're doing this interview, as we speak, reporting on the atrocities of ISIS.
Al Hamza says he does not know what fate awaits him. But in this war against ISIS propaganda, he will not hide his identity.
And it was so important to show our faces because many, like especially when we started, many people they started to say that we are like a government group or a government organization. We want to tell the people that we're local, we're from the city.
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
Well, a highly successful pop group has a new single. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins International Edition's Sarah Williams with more.
We've got one of the hottest bands on the planet right now. They're known as the Chain Smokers, Andrew Taggart and Alex Paul. These guys come from New York City. They put their band together 7-8 years ago. They've released a couple of EPs. And in April, they put out their debut album, which is called Memories Do Not Open. The album went to number one. They've had a few big hits off the album, including a song that was number one for 12 straight weeks called Closer, which is Chainsmokers, and that features Halsey. A lot of people know that song. And you realize, if you think about it, there's only two songs that have been on the charts at number one longer than 12 weeks. Number one would be One Fine Day, Mariah Carey and Boys to Men, which was 16 weeks at number one. And number two was Uptown Funk with Bruno Mars and Mark Ronson. That was number one for 14 weeks. They're currently on tour for the album, and they've just announced they're going to be performing in New York Central Park as a part of the Global Citizens Music Festival. The date is September 23rd. It'll be broadcast live on MSNBC.com and iHeartRadio. Last year's concert in Central Park raised about $30 billion, and they're hoping to do the same. Also on the bill, Green Day, The Killers, Stevie Wonder, Alessia Cara, Andra Day, quite a few acts. But today it's all about Chainsmokers, and we're going to listen to their brand new song, which is called Honest, right here on International Edition. If I'm being honest, if I'm being
honest, you said I should be honest. Now, didn't they have another song between Closer and this one, something about Paris or...
Yes, exactly. They had... Well, what a good memory. See, you're a fan. You're a closet fan. I knew it. Yes.
Shh.
Paris, and they also have a song that's out currently that's been lingering on the charts with Coldplay, something just like this. And so the band are on tour. They were asked how they came up with the name Chainsmokers. What does that mean? Cigarette smoking? No. Has to do with marijuana smoking. So that's what they decided to go with, the name Chainsmokers. And as I mentioned, they're on tour. The tour hasn't been selling well for some odd reason or another. They're not selling out everywhere they perform, which is kind of strange for a group that has already won a Grammy. And they're nominated for an MTV award at the Video Music Awards on August 27th. That's Chainsmokers, and Honesty is their new song.
Well, maybe they'll get more visibility now.
Yeah, as a result of International Edition.
Well, hopefully. I don't know about that. Thanks very much, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings. But you're not the only one on my mind. If I'm being honest.
Well, you've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Greg Burns. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have yourself a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
For much of its brief existence, South Sudan has been mired in a civil war, a conflict that has killed tens of thousands of people and forced some 4 million to flee their homes, creating Africa's worst refugee crisis since the 1994 Rwandan genocide. A 2015 peace agreement and a transitional government formed in early 2016 failed to end the violence. In late May of this year, President Salva Kiir declared a unilateral government ceasefire and promised a release of political prisoners. But no prisoners have been released, and despite the ceasefire, heavy fighting has been reported in parts of the country, according to the UN. This is particularly true of the opposition stronghold near the town of Pagak in Upper Nile State. On July 24th, the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, an eight-country regional development organization in East Africa that has been trying to mediate the situation in South Sudan, announced that it will convene a forum to revitalize implementation of the 2015 peace agreement. In late July, Norway, the United Kingdom, and the United States, known as the Troika in the context of the South Sudan peace effort, as well as the European Union, issued a statement condemning the continued violence in South Sudan. The PAGAC offensive is a clear violation of the unilateral ceasefire declared by President Salva Kiir and calls into question the government's commitment to reach peace through the national dialogue. The statement welcomed the IGAD decision to revitalize the South Sudan peace process. The proliferation of violence, displacement, and food insecurity renders any discussion of elections in the foreseeable future as an unnecessary diversion from the primary goals of achieving peace and reconciliation, said the Troika statement. South Sudan's leaders, neighbors, and regional and international partners must first focus on achieving peace in order to create the conditions needed to hold credible elections. To achieve these urgent goals, we look forward to the prompt revitalization of an inclusive and credible peace process by IGAD. Such progress would be required in order for the Troika and EU to commit further resources to institutions designed to implement the agreement.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.